Hey everybody, we are back on Dubs Talk. Warriors insider Monty Poole and Kareth Burke with you. Not too long after the Warriors took a tough loss against the Minnesota Timberwolves. So the three-game win streak the Warriors had going is over. Their nine-game home streak is over. And Monty, when you look at this box score, there's one thing you can point to immediately. It's the turnovers.
Yeah, when you gave 90... The Timberwolves scored 99 points, and 24 of those points came off Warriors turnovers. What's worse, and more directly responsible for the result, is that the Warriors gave them 20 points off turnovers in the second half.
Ah, okay.
11 in the fourth quarter. Minnesota scored 46 points in the quarter in the half, and 20 came off turnovers. That's called giving a team a game. And so that stands out in the way, obviously the way they lost it inside the final minute with three possessions that I thought, can you break them down? And these are this is the Warriors with their worst traits. You come down, you take a quick shot inside the, with a lead inside the final minute, you take a quick shot. Jordan takes a launch of a 28-foot three. It doesn't drop. The ball goes the other way. Draymond tries to pass the ball to Clay. The pass got about 2 feet before Kyle Anderson steals it. Mm-hmm. Feeds Karl Anthony Towns for three. Warriors now trail. And then Jordan's pass. So you look at that, and it's a breakdown of execution. And it's the two things that really this team can often fall into that trap where the turnovers will kill them and the poor shot selection.
Yeah.
And so, you know, these are things that have bugged them off and on all season. And tonight it bit them in the backside big time.
Yeah, this is why it feels so essential that the Warriors stay at the sixth seed or above. If they get into that play-in, it's dangerous, because if they just have one of those baffling Warriors games, because they have been winning more lately, they are trending up. But if you look season long and how we've been talking season long about how this is an average team, a 500 team, if they fall into their same traps, if they just happen to have one really bad game in that play-in, that could be it. That's it. Yeah. So I'm kind of, I don't want to be too hysterical here, I guess, but sort of like how bad was this loss? What kind of snapshot was this? Especially considering the Warriors only have six games left this season.
This is probably the worst of the season. When you look at all things considered, one, they were at home where they're really, really good. They're playing a Timberwolves team that came into this game a game and a half behind them. And that's now a half a game. And they had a chance to win the game. I mean, Gary Payton II, we'll get talk about more about him later, but there was a point in the fourth quarter where he really gave them a spark they needed.
Yeah.
They were down nine, and he hits a three, and they're down six. And then he draws an offensive foul on Karl Anthony Towns, and now they're down four. And before long, they have a lead. And it was a great moment for Gary and a good opportunity. I'm thinking, you know what? If they win this game, this is the pivotal point. You know, they were down nine, and with Gary makes some things happen on both ends of the court, and now it's a game again, and they even have a lead, but they fumbled it away. So when you look at, the timing of it, you know, you're looking at, you know, game 76 and the opponent and the fact that they were on their home court where they have had 11 comeback wins.
Yeah.
11 comeback wins. And tonight I was thinking, okay, this could be number 12. And
what was that?
it was baffling to watch, because these are the defending champions.
Yeah.
And the way they lost this game was like a team that hadn't been there before. You know, this is a close game against an opponent that is right with you. And an opponent that you could see in the postseason, possibly, you know, you don't know. You could see in a play-in game. You know, I asked Clay about it, and he didn't seem to be too bothered by all the things that happened. You know, he's hey, it happens kind of thing. And it's the NBA and, you know, off night. And he thought everybody had an off night except for Jordan, I think he said. Well, Jordan's night was, he scored. But, you know, there are a lot of things you can pick at. I don't know, what did Jordan's plus minus end up being? Let's look at.
Well, I know that he scored 27 off the bench. Yeah. So he was the leading scorer tonight. He's got 60 in the last two games. His plus minus, though, Jordan, is minus 11. 11. Minus 11. Tonight.
So, it's just that, you know, fans love Jordan because of what he can do, but it's hard. They grit their teeth on some of the things that he does. And when I say fans, I mean even some of his teammates and even some of the coaches. They're like, you know, and so there are just so many things that happened over the last few minutes of this game and in the entire fourth quarter, really, hell, the entire second half. That the Warriors were so un-Warrior-like, so unbecoming of a defending champion. And it was kind of shocking to watch in the crowd, you know, sellout crowd. And they're used to seeing the Warriors come back. And there was energy in the building almost until the final seconds.
Yeah.
And they walked out of here. They were stunned in silence. You know, that's like, holy moly. They just gave away a game where they had the lead inside the last minute. And they gave it away with a shot turnover by Jordan and two bad passes, one by Draymond and one by Jordan. It's a horrible way to lose a game, and it's going to hurt them it's going to hurt until at least Tuesday when they play again against the Pelicans.
Yeah. Well, there are several culprits, we can say, in this game. All of the main ball handlers really struggled with turnovers. Draymond had 5, Klay had 3, Steph had 3, Poole had 3, and they just all came at times that just felt like, oh, man, darn it. Okay, like there could be no traction in the game, really. Like, this game never felt comfortable for the Warriors. In fact, Steve Kerr said we didn't deserve to win. That was his comment post-game. I do definitely want to talk about GP2 because it really seems like there was going to be a hero story pre-written for him, especially with the way that he played. But before we get to GP2, let's just have Steph button up this topic because he said something interesting post-game about, you know, they've been talking about the playoff feel to some of these games lately. Here's Steph reflecting on this game's playoff feel.
There were a couple of possessions where we got a little rushed for no reason, but It's one of those situations where it wasn't pretty, but if you find a way to just, you know, finish those last 45 seconds, it's just a different feeling. And that's just the way the league goes. And you got to take that pill and swallow it just because, you know, we lost and try to learn from it, knowing that that's kind of like a playoff type situation where it can swing a series if you, you know, can grind out a win. Whatever, however ugly it is, no matter how many turnovers you have and stuff, you obviously want to play better, so you have to address that. But it's just a tough one.
All right, so that seems like an important lesson that Steph is talking about, the small margins that the Warriors have to play in, that they have to be locked in every single possession, making good decisions, good passes, good shot selection. So it's almost like, okay, if they can take this hard lesson now at the end of the regular season, is this something that they look at in the postseason of, remember when we did X, Y, and Z? Remember how bad that felt? I mean, I would rather they take the lesson now, Monty, than in the first round.
Yeah. But I mean, this is the kind of game that the Warriors traditionally in their recent past, at least in the past, you know, 8-9 years, they force the other team to do these, to make these mistakes. You know, they find a way, whether it's, you know, forcing Houston to miss 27 three-pointers or, you know, forcing, you know, J.R. Smith to forget where the hell he is. You know, I mean, these are things that they normally would do to other teams, and to see these guys doing it, and not just these guys, to see their best players doing it, you know, to see Draymond and JP doing this, it's like, oh my God, you know. And I you know, understand Draymond's pass. It was kind of it was a premature pass.
It wasn't as crisp as he usually does.
No,
he got knocked around in this game too.
Oh God, yeah, he got beat up.
Yeah,
but I just thought you're talking about Gary and what he was able to bring to this game and Steph and what he had to say about this. It's like, yeah, there was so much there for this team to take and carry with them to victory. And this is in terms of giving away a game, this is like literal. You know, you're here, take this ball and go Carl Anthony Towns and get your open three.
Yeah.
In transition. They can't defend that shot because it's in transition. And so it was just one of those things where you watch this and it's hard to believe that a team of their stature could lose a game like this at home, mm-hmm. at home where they've been so good. And so there's a lot to reflect on. And, you know, when Steph talks about the playoffs, yes, this kind of carelessness, recklessness, poor execution can kill you in a postseason. So yeah, you're right. Better to see it now, but now is when they are in postseason mode.
Yeah. Let's segue to a little bit of sunshine because it was GP2's return. He joined the team at the trade deadline on February 9th, hasn't played since then, played 15 minutes in this one. And leading up to this game and also post game, you can tell how much Gary's teammates like to have him around, how popular he is on the team, but also that he's a difference maker when he plays.
Yeah. I mean, first of all, you have to acknowledge the fact that the fans were euphoric about GP's return. I mean, as soon as he got off the bench and started making his way to the scorer's table, people started standing and cheering. He got the standing ovation treatment. And that tells you how much they love this guy. They love what he did last season for this team. You know, without him, you know, do they win a championship? I think not. I think he was that big over the course of the season. And, you know, once he got hurt in the playoffs, it hurt them. He came back late and was able to help him again. But so he gets a standing ovation and he comes in and he looks fine. He said he felt fine. Yeah. But to see him in the fourth quarter play meaningful minutes and play them very well at a crucial time, that had to be, for the Warriors, that had to be heartwarming. You know, it's like, okay, he's not just back, but he's back and he's contributing. He's doing the things we need him to do. You know, he hits the open three and then he forces the turnover on Towns. And the Warriors, it's like all of a sudden, now, after that turnover on Towns, Jordan Poole made a shot. Mm-hmm. And the Warriors within four, and guess what happens? Timberwolves timeout.
Yeah.
And it's just a little burst that GP2 started. Mm-hmm. So his effect is that dramatic and that instantaneous at times, because he makes things happen in an instant. Yeah. You know, he can turn a possession on either end so quickly. So I just thought, yeah, I mean, the Warriors would be in a much better place, standings wise, of course, if he had been here and able to play season.
Yeah,
because he gives them something they do not have elsewhere. They just don't have it. And it's even more noticeable that what he brings with Andrew Wiggins being absent, you know, and Wiggins is not there to bring his defense. So I think to see GP2, I mean, we talked in the last podcast and I said, it's going to be a matter of days, not weeks. And literally it was like 3 days.
Yeah.
You know, it was 3 days. So he's back now and he looks good. Feels good, he said. And so this is going to be a big boost for them, for this team. They needed it. They needed it 2 months ago.
Yeah.
But they have it now for the last six games, or last seven, counting this game. So I'm happy for Gary because, as he said, he feels like he's back home.
Yeah. Fans were nuts over Gary Payton tonight. They watching him put on his sweatband, it was almost like Superman putting on his cape. And it's like, all right, let's get ready to play. But that's the kind of reception that he got. Even when they were warming up pregame and there was the shot of him on the Jumbotron, the crowd started to roar. That was when Steph was in the background, like dancing and cheering for him. So I think you just saw the happiness of everybody, fans and team alike, to get Gary Payton the second back for this game. All of these games that air on NBC Sports Bay Area are also streamable on the go on the NBC Sports app. That's for mobile or tablet. Stream the Warriors on the go, brought to you by your NorCal Honda dealers. All right, something to pay attention to going forward. GP2 does fit into this conversation a little bit about minutes, the minute distribution now that he's back. But I want to talk about the starting lineup, actually. How much tinkering do you think Steve Kerr will do in some of these final games? And I asked this question thinking about Dante DiVincenzo in the starting lineup, where he's had a lot of success, actually. I think the Warriors like his defense there. He's been a little quieter scoring and shooting. And then you also have Jonathan Kuminga making his rise this season, kind of peaking at the right time. And he's had a few starts after the All-Star break. Do you wonder if there might be some, I don't know, would Steve Kerr experiment a little bit with JK in the starting lineup? Do you think Dante there is firm? And all of this, of course, is without Andrew Wiggins.
Yeah, I think I actually thought that that could happen, you know, before the game against Minnesota, because Minnesota is a huge team. You know, Gobert is 7'1", 7'2". Carl Anthony Towns is about 7 feet. You know, they've got four guys in that lineup that are 6'9" when they put Kyle Anderson out there. So 6'9" or taller. And so to go as small as they did was a risk, but it's what they've been doing. And they've won the last three games that way. So I understand, you know, Steve Kerr wanted to, you know, give another go. Didn't work out so well. Dante's production is definitely down. I can recall him saying when somebody was asking him about his 3-point shot, because he was shooting in the 40%, he was shooting 40 plus percent. And he was asked about it and he didn't want to talk about it because he was afraid it might jinx him. No. Well, since then, you know, his 3-point shot has disappeared on him. He's made like three in the last, you know, couple of weeks, it seems like, you know.
He attempted one shot period against Minnesota. Yeah. And I think it was a layup.
Yeah. So, I think now with the Pelicans coming in on Tuesday, and Brandon Ingram has been really playing well. He's 6'8". I wouldn't dare put Dante on that guy right now. Mm. I wouldn't. I mean, who do you guard him with? I'm thinking possibly start with JK.
Okay.
I think at this point of the season, every single game matters. Every single game has impact on where you finish this season. And you're trying like hell to stay out of the top, stay in the top six. So, yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if he tries to give JK a turn. I think JK has earned it a little bit. I mean, his last two games weren't loud, but his previous five or six games were pretty good, really good. He's been good most of the month. So that's possible. Just because of Ingram being so good, and he's mostly a perimeter guy, but he's so long. He's so long. And I don't know, if you don't put JK out there at the start, who do you put on him? You know,
I don't know.
You say, okay, Draymond, you deal with him. That's another option. That could be the other option, but Draymond usually, you know, guards up. Mm-hmm. And so Ingram is, you know, a little, just slightly taller than Draymond. So, I'm curious to see what he does about that. But I do think that as these games go, and we've seen Steve Kerr do this in the past, where he will, in postseason, in the playoffs, he will change lineups in the middle of a series.
Yes.
Because he sees something or notices something, or wants a different look. And so I think these games are playoff games. They are. They don't officially, but when you look at all the impact and ramifications they have, they are playoff games. So I wouldn't be surprised if there is a change. I wouldn't be surprised if there's some rotational stuff goes on. With Gary coming back, it's going to be natural. You know, Dante's minutes are going to be affected. JK's minutes are going to be affected. You know, Jordan's minutes could be affected on a night when he's not playing well, you know. So it's Gary gives them another option, and that it's a good option. And it's an option that on the road where their defense has been really bad, it's going to be crucial, I think. I mean, you might see Gary play even more just to give them a little bit of defensive presence. But they have two more home games, you know, Pelicans and then the Spurs, two games that they need to win. You know, the Spurs obviously don't care to win. The Pelicans are still in the play. They're in a playing situation right now, so they're right there. But, yeah, I look forward to the kind of changes, and I don't think they will stay static every game for the rest of the season. I think if they win on Tuesday with whatever they start, whatever they do, they'll stick with that. But I do think that if they lose again and they start the same way they did, you know, on Sunday, I do think that they may be forced into doing something else, certainly that's matchup based.
Yeah.
And to me, you know, like I say, Kuminga is a guy who you can matchup base against a guy like Brandon Ingram of the Pelicans.
Okay. All right. I'm thinking all of this is predicated putting JK in the starting lineup if his defense is there. So yes, I can imagine the voices in his ear right now trying to encourage him. Like, listen, this is your moment. We need you. You're ready for this. You have to play defense. But then we've also seen him respond to that challenge and enjoy taking on the other team's best players.
Yeah, if he, you know, he always says he wants to play the team's best player. Well, Brandon Ingram is, you know, he and CJ McCollum are that team's best players.
There's your example, Ingram, yeah.
Yeah, but Ingram is the guy, I mean, with Zion out, yeah. With Ingram is the guy who fits, he's a better defensive matchup for JK physically, you know. And that's why I think even if JK doesn't start that game, he's got to get minutes on Ingram. He has to. And I don't think I'm certain that that will happen. The only question is whether he will start or come off the bench, but I wouldn't be surprised if he plays 25 minutes in that game. And if he plays well, it could go even higher than that.
Yeah. Okay. One more thing to talk about before we wrap up this podcast. Klay Thompson had 5 3-pointers against the Timberwolves, bringing his season total for threes to 273. That's massive. In fact, he was chasing Buddy Hield. Now I think Klay Thompson is in control of the number one spot, the most three-pointers this season.
Temporarily, at least, yes.
Yes, because Buddy didn't play. And Klay's record in a season for threes is 276. So he needs 4 more threes to surpass that with 6 games left.
Yep.
I know we just talked about jinxes, but yeah. I think there's a good chance.
Yeah.
And I just feel so happy for Klay seeing that, because at the beginning of the season, do you remember how emotional he was, you know, mm-hmm. listening to those voices saying he's lost a step? And I think when he can show, at least from the shooting standpoint, that he is the same old Klay, I think that's going to really go far for him.
Yeah, he's shooting 40% from three at a high volume. And I Steve Kerr said he can do that when he's 90.
Yeah.
You know, and that's the thing about a shooter. I mean, and Klay is a shooter first and foremost. Yeah, it's not that he can't handle the ball, can't pass, can't defend, but he came into this league as a shooter. And that's the part that he will leave this league with. If everything else goes away, he will still be able to go out there and shoot a 25-foot shot and make it and splash it. So
yeah.
Watching him come back and do that this year has been one of the treats of Warrior fans this season. And, you know, the Warriors had been told and Klay had been told that it might take you a year, a little longer maybe, to get back to where you were, to feel like you're good in every way. Mm-hmm. And I think offensively he is. Defensively, of course, yeah, he's not the same defensive player he was before these injuries happened.
Understandable.
I don't think it's reasonable to expect that he ever will be that guy again. But he's playing good defense on many nights against guys that are tough assignments.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I'm sure he may get a turn on Ingram. You know, he can give him a shot too, because, you know, he's got the range to do it. So, for Klay to come in and shoot as well he's been shooting this year, and doing it on a consistent basis. By that I'm saying not every game in, game out, because his shooting it kind of comes and goes sometimes. But Steph's missed half the games almost this season, or close to half the games. He's missed 30 plus games this year. So Wiggins has been out. So with Wiggins out of the lineup, Jordan been up and down all year, and Steph missing, being out of the lineup a lot, Klay has been the constant. He's been the guy who's been there pretty much every night. Early in the season, he didn't play back-to-backs, but now he's doing that. So he's becoming, dare we say it, Iron Man Klay again, in the sense that he's out there for every game. Yeah. Yeah. He was that for many years. He was that. Yeah, I know. But he's been their constant. And so that in itself is a victory for Klay.
Mm-hmm.
Be the second half of the season to be out there for every game is a victory. So he's not sitting around watching the second night of a back-to-back. There are no more back-to-backs this season, but early this season you understood why, you know, he was sitting back-to-backs, but watching him now and just where he is now. And he knows how badly this team needs him.
Mm-hmm.
And he also understands that, you know, he believes in his heart that they still can make another run to the top.
Yeah.
And so I think that's what drives him is being able to have that feeling and to be able to go out there and make shots like he has been. And so, yeah, there's no reason for Klay. He's had some edge this season. And when I say that, you know, Klay has been think about this. Klay's career, he's been kind of a lovable, happy-go-lucky guy on the court. Yeah. This year, it's been a little bit of beefing, you know, Devin Booker and Dylan Brooks and here and there every now and then. So Klay is a little chippier now than he used to be, but that's not necessarily a bad thing for the Warriors.
Yeah, I don't think he likes to be undermined. I don't think he likes his reputation in question. I don't think he likes those implications that he slipped a little bit. Not after a championship season, he'll tell you. Not after he counts his four rings. And Monty, just thinking as Klay, that's right, 1, 2, 3, 4. As Klay arrives at this three-point total of 273, his record came for threes in a season in that 2015-2016 season, okay? That was a young man's game. Klay is very much a different player now. And I'm really glad he has this because you know that he prides himself on being such a pure shooter. So the fact that he didn't play back-to-backs starting the season, that he's arrived at this number playing fewer games than some of the other guys chasing him in that, you know, in that three-point column. And the fact that his November was slow, his December was slow. He kind of got into that trap where he wanted to get back to being such a good shooter that he would chuck a little bit. Mm-hmm. But then he turned that around with the best January of his career, the best February of his career, and what he's doing now. He is so essential to what the Warriors are trying to do right now and how high they can go in the postseason, because he does need to be a constant, consistent scorer while there's so much fluctuation around him.
Yeah, and the other thing about Klay is, and you know, you watched him a long time too, you know that could be a night where he's like 1 for 12 and he'll hit a big shot in the fourth quarter. I mean, yeah. You know, even when you look back at the game against the Timberwolves, you know, Klay didn't shoot the ball very well, but in the fourth quarter, he had a big three, you know, mm-hmm. So it sometimes just comes out of nowhere. But having him on that team, on the floor every night for the Warriors is really kind of a blessing right now. And he's out there doing his thing. Defensively, yeah, you know, he has some good nights. He's had some great nights this year, and he's had some nights where he wasn't so good. Some nights where you can see maybe his body wasn't quite where he'd like it to be. But that shot, man, I mean, I go back to what Andre Iguodala always says about his son. He said, "My son likes Steph. I tell him to shoot like Klay." Because it's so picturesque, you know? Yeah. I mean, Klay's shot is classic. And yeah, that'll be there for as long as he can walk.
There you go. Until he's 90. That's really nice. I like imagining Klay pulling up at the park and just draining him when he's 90 years old.
I would not put it past him. Would not.
All right. That's a nice image to end on. Monty Poole, thank you very much. I'm Kareth Burke, and we'll be back on Dubstock very soon.
Jump into Peppa's world of play. Look for spring flowers, hunt for muddy puddles, and bravely explore exciting places with Peppa play sets. Peppa Pig, inspiring kid confidence.